Every day there is a forgetting, and every moment there is the possibility of remembering. Remembering who you truly are, awakening to your body, to the inner world and experience of being alive. Here is where you find the beauty, the joy. Here is where you free your soma.
Hello, and welcome to Free Your Soma, Stories of Somatic Awakening and How to Live from the Inside Out. I'm here with my wonderful friend, colleague, and recent graduate of Radiance, Beth Warner. We have known each other for quite some time, and we've watched each other really evolve in our body practices, not only as individuals, but also professionally. And I'm so excited to have her here today to share about her expertise and the things that she's up to as a physical therapist, or as they say in Australia and other countries, physiotherapist. So welcome, Beth. Please, introduce yourself a little bit to our audience.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me. As Amy said, I am a physiotherapist. Prior to that, I was a Bikram yoga teacher full-time for a very long time, which is how I met Amy initially. And I taught yoga in Australia, in the States, and in Indonesia for several years. Teaching yoga was a fantastic job, and I got a lot out of it. And I really enjoyed working with bodies and working with people at that time. And I got to a stage in my life where I realized that I needed to do a little bit more with my brain, or something different with my brain. And one of my yoga students, actually, who was a physiotherapist, said to me after class, "You should be a physio." And initially I was like, "That's sports injuries and stuff. Like, I don't know anything about sports. What is that?" Because I had a limited understanding of what it was to be a physiotherapist. But once I looked into it and I realized the breadth of the scope that you can have as a physio, I realized that it was actually probably the right thing for me to do. And so I went back to uni, finished my degree, and have been working full-time as a physiotherapist for the last 3 years.
Excellent. Yes, yes. And I love that you're doing that, because you are always so passionate and knowledgeable and curious. There's a lot of curiosity that I feel like you have. And as a yoga teacher, I felt like that was really, really heartening or something. Like, it felt like you were genuinely interested in like why my body or somebody's body might be doing something, or something might be taking place. There was a genuine curiosity that you had about like what was going on with that, so to speak. And I think that kind of curiosity, first of all, it's contagious. So then it brings the student into like a deeper curiosity about themselves. And there's this lack of judgment in it too. There's a lack, when we're curious about things, it's different than being like skeptical, or it's different than being like determined or something, that things are already some way. Curiosity is this openness that I feel like you have. And that always was something that just encouraged and delighted me as your colleague and as your student. So it makes sense to me you're in this field where there would be a deeper learning about this stuff.
That's a very delightful way of putting it. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that you have that same quality too, which is why we got along so well when we were teaching yoga together. But I think you're right. I think that curiosity is probably the driving force in all areas of my life. That is probably just an essential component of who I am, is generally being curious and also being open and really not being judgmental. And I think that those things are really helpful qualities in teaching yoga, but also in physiotherapy. But this is also why this is a very good job for me. Like, there are many avenues for me to, I guess, employ my curiosity, both in terms of working with the people who come in and the people in front of me, but also in terms of broadening my own skill set and my knowledge. And I feel like if you have an approach that is curious, you can't get bored in the job and you can't get fatigued with it or over it. I think there are limitless possibilities for things that you can explore and ways that you can think about the human body and areas of treatment that you can investigate. And that's what I find to be really rewarding about the job, as well as the interaction with people, which is the number one best thing about it.
Right, absolutely. And that's that curiosity that's led you into, you're a physiotherapist, professional yoga teacher. Now you have taken an integrative breathing training, and you're an integrative breathing training practitioner. And now with the somatic skills that you have personally acquired in the Radiance program, you are really kind of diversifying your knowledge base and your approach is going to become, I can just see it becoming very specific and integrated and holistic and really individualized, like personalized to the person that's in front of you, because you're going to have all these different pieces that you can pull in and kind of bring into a treatment plan for somebody.
Yes, I think that's true. And I, in terms of all of the CPD that I've done and the different bits of training that I've done over time, I realized that that's, I guess, the overarching purpose of all of those is to have a skill set that means that I can be flexible and responsive to the individual patient that's in front of me. And rather than having like a sort of one way only approach to it, or just having a few limited skills, that you've got the versatility to approach treatment in a variety of ways. And I often bring the breath stuff in, I bring the somatic stuff in, I can bring yoga stuff in, I can bring like conventional physiotherapy stuff in. And it means that I certainly feel that I've got more tools and more ways of connecting to people and also giving them treatment options. But it also, all of those are employed, and you talked about this briefly at the start, but really I guess the main thing is people, helping people to understand what is happening in their bodies, to connect to their bodies, and to then have their own tools for how to manage discomfort and pain and dysfunction, so that they are actually empowered to do those things, to have a great understanding of those things in themselves, so that eventually, you know, you discharge them and, you know, they're released from physiotherapy, basically. That's the idea. And I think I've been very fortunate in the place that I work that I have bosses who are very, very supportive of that, very understanding about that, you know, as well too, that I don't just have to take a conventional sort of physiotherapy approach, that I can bring in all of these broader experiences that I have and skill sets that I have.
Yeah, you know, that is important, the time and the place. And I mean, we both experienced that, I'm sure, just in our professional yoga teaching careers. Sometimes there were studios that wanted things done a certain way and would get particularly fussy about things being a certain way in the way that you were teaching, you know, and wouldn't budge about certain things. And then there were other studios that would be like way more flexible about how something was done in a yoga class, because they were open to considering, you know, things like hypermobility or ways to handle injuries that were not necessarily in the script that we were given when we did our yoga training, right? People who were kind of more open-minded about, you know, embracing different approaches to the same practice, you know, because for those of you who don't know, for the listeners who aren't really familiar, Bikram Hot Yoga is a very disciplined, very, it can be a very strict style of yoga with the same 26 postures over and over. And granted, I was really into it for a long time because it is a powerful practice, right? And at the same time, I ended up injuring myself without realizing it because I didn't have proper guidance about some of these particular issues that were going on in my body. And during my time in Indonesia, Beth was a great support to me. I learned a lot from her because she had actually already been down that road of looking at certain issues like hypermobility, right? And looking at how that fits or doesn't fit within a yoga model and what's to be considered. Can you say a little bit about your own discoveries around hypermobility?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, I didn't realize I was hypermobile until I started doing Bikram yoga. I was just in my body. And, you know, I was always very clumsy and more likely to sprain ankles and, you know, had those types of injuries and things like that, and just generally a little bit kind of like wobbly in my joints. But it wasn't until I started doing Bikram yoga that I actually realized that it was not quite normal, and that I did bend a bit more than other people in ways that were not necessarily healthy for me. And so in some ways it was frustrating, but it was also a very productive journey to go through, of realizing this and then of having some mentors and some teachers who were knowledgeable and very helpful, and some who just had no idea and were not helpful at all. Yeah, and trying to sort of learn for myself and advocate for myself, and then eventually advocate, you know, for other students. That was a very, I guess, productive and character developing thing to have to go through. But I think I remember there was one time, and there was a teacher, Lynn Whitlow, who we know, who's a very senior teacher in the Bikram yoga community, and she'd come to visit Australia where I was practicing in the studio. And I've been having these issues for quite some time with my knees being very hypermobile and having a lot of knee pain and hip pain and discomfort and feeling like I couldn't balance and feeling my knee went too far back and it just wasn't right. And the teachers that I had at that time, and this is not, this is not their fault. This is how they were taught, you know, and they were just repeating what they knew. And so they would just say to me, oh, you just need to push your knee back. You just have to push it back. You just have to get stronger. As though magically, by pushing my knee all the way back through its extreme range of motion, it was going to miraculously become straight over time, which is just not going to happen. But Lynn Mittler came and taught a workshop, and I plucked up the courage to ask her about it. And she was like, no, your knee bends too far backwards. That is not correct. And she made me learn how to hold my knee straight. And it was a very weird experience because she said, okay, now your leg is straight. And I was like, no, that feels bent. And she said, your brain does not know where your knee is. And I was like, that is true. It doesn't know. It was a real revelation to me to be like, oh, that's right. And that part of what I had to do was train my brain to understand better where my body was in space, to make my brain and my body connect better so that they actually could understand each other and communicate better. And that was a real turning point for me in understanding what was happening in my body. And then as a teacher, being able to understand, this is before I was a teacher that this happened, but then later on as a teacher, being able to understand what was happening for other people. Yeah, that was the beginning of me going, oh, something, something's happening.
Wonderful. Yeah. And I mean, it continued to, I feel like there's more, there's so much more awareness about it now within, yes. I mean, I'm not really tapped into the Bikram community as much anymore, but there's so much more awareness of it now. What would you say about that? Do you think that there's more awareness of it?
I definitely think so. I see a lot more about it in just in sort of yoga publications and things like that. I see it more in blogs. And I think what's happened too is that when I was practicing, I was maybe at the peak of sort of Bikram yoga being really popular. But I think what happened is you had this massive uptake of yoga and a massive uptake in this particular style of yoga. And so suddenly you're just having a lot more people who are hypermobile coming in, and initially people not knowing what to do or how to deal with that. But that over time, the industry has got better at recognizing that this is actually a thing and at talking about it and having debates about it and working out how to deal with it. And in fact, a couple of days ago, I did some talks at a yoga teacher training, and the teacher trainees themselves were much more aware about it and much more receptive to talking about hypermobility and how to manage it than I've encountered previously. So I do feel like there is a shift just generally of people having a better idea about what this is, which is very heartening to see.
Right. Well, and part of it also, I'm assuming, is that there might be, and I know this was the case for me before I started having pain as a result of my banana leg, my leg bent backwards, was that it, you know, if I wasn't experiencing pain from it, then it's not a problem, yes. Right? That it's not a problem that I'm pulled out of natural alignment, that I'm, you know, kind of twisted and bent backward. But the truth is, and what I discovered myself, is it's not a problem yet, but it is a yes. way that we can end up overextending, injuring, even tearing muscles, damaging yes. ligaments, all these things. And so there's a lot to be learned, you know, even as someone who, you know, maybe has been practicing for a while. Like for me, I was practicing quite a while before I learned that I was hypermobile and that there was an actual issue. And I learned about it through pain, right? Yes. And I learned about it in like a kind of a difficult way, like having to, you know, face my ego that was used to being able to go a certain distance in a pose. Yes. And have to pull back and have to relearn how to do that pose differently, right?
Yes. And I think that sort of the fetishization of flexibility is a big part of that. And it's obviously that's not in every single yoga practice, and it's not in, you know, every single Bikram yoga studio, but there can be people get a lot of positive validation for going very deep into postures. That's seen as being advanced, or it's seen as being good at asana, at physical yoga postures, is to be able to go deep into it. And I think that idea, first of all, prevented people from seeing the hypermobility and recognizing that it was a problem. It was just seen as people being really flexible or being really good or being able to get really deep into these postures. But I also think then that there is this challenge for practitioners of yoga, as you said, to back off from their depth and to lose that sense of validation or to lose that sense of affirmation that they get from being flexible and from being good at yoga in that way and getting deep into postures. And that is very challenging to do. And it can be very challenging as a teacher to guide somebody through that journey of backing off and learning how to actually stabilize through your joints rather than going to end range and rather than going to flexibility. And I think you're right. Like, I was probably fortunate in that I had pain very quickly in my yoga practice, that I had a lot of knee pain and I was like, this seems bad. You know, even though I had people saying to me, oh no, it's okay, like pain kills the pain, or, you know, this kind of sort of rubbish statement actually. But I in myself was like, no, I don't think that's right. I don't want to do that to my body. And I think right. I was fortunate I had that quit fairly early on.
And, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, I think I did have pain, but I was really good at ignoring my pain. And I was really good at overriding my pain. And the pain wasn't consistent enough, right, that I was paying attention to it. And it was only once it became like very consistent that I could no longer ignore it. It only became until I was like literally limping around and other people were commenting on the way that I moved, that it became this thing that I had to look at. And, you know, that of course is related to my own personal journey, the lack of proprioception that I had in my body in general, you know, where these signals weren't fully being received. Like in the moment, there was like a lag time between like doing a thing and then like the result of that thing actually catching up in my brain and going, oh, I think I hurt myself or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that body awareness that I thought I had it. We don't know what we don't know, you know? I thought I had it, but then it was layers upon layers of realization to get me to the point where I was like, oh, I actually really don't know where my body is unless I'm wearing tight pants and staring in a mirror at myself. I actually have no idea.
Yes. And I think like that's such an important point, because that is extremely common in hypermobility. People who, you know, and that's more than just having a couple of joints that are a bit bendy, but people who are hypermobile generally have poor proprioception. They don't have good joint position sense. They don't have good awareness of where their body is in space. They often don't have good interoception. They sometimes don't have very good like recognition that they're actually hungry or tired or thirsty. All of those things can be a little bit impaired. And so that can be an issue, because they are not necessarily going to pick up on this stuff until there has been not so much damage, but quite a bit of, I guess, threat to the body, into the body systems. Until the body is actually really yelling, listen to me, please. There is a big problem. Please stop doing that. The signals don't get through so well. And it theoretically, and if taught well, Bikram yoga can actually be a very good tool for teaching proprioception, because you do have visual feedback. You have a mirror. Because you do also have verbal instruction, because you are doing static postures, because you have repetition of postures. So if it's taught effectively, it can actually be a good tool for people who are hypermobile to learn how to tell where their body is in space. It's just not often taught in a way that facilitates that for people, but that doesn't mean it's not possible.
Right. And I agree with you. And, you know, that was my first, you know, body practice, and I loved it. I mean, it was absolutely, I mean, I'm probably addicted to it in terms of the feeling that it gave me in so many different ways, right? And the, you know, even just the, you know, the looking at myself in a mirror for 90 minutes, you know, and doing something, getting through something hard, you know, and the sweating and just the way that it puts you in an altered state of reality. It was a trip. I mean, for sure, like the years that I spent doing that practice were a huge part of my development as a person. And they're not separate from who I am now, even though I've chosen to go, well, not even chosen. I feel like at sometimes with my dad, it was like kicking and screaming, being dragged in another direction where I didn't even know where I was going. And I somehow ended up here. And it's, you know, it's been quite an amazing journey. You know, but I love that you are still connected to the yoga sphere and you're bringing in, you know, those pieces from yoga into your physical therapy, but you're also bringing wisdom and knowledge back into the yoga world through these small ways so that people can learn more about this and so that people can, you know, protect themselves from hurting themselves.
Yeah, I enjoy being able to do that. And it's satisfying for me, especially having been through this sometimes frustrating journey of trying to talk about this stuff with people, to now being in a position where I feel like I can offer something that's helpful and that is really received very well by the trainees that, you know, I go and give these lectures to. I think, and part of that is because, yeah, I agree with you. Like Bikram yoga is a massive part of my life for a very long time. And it did very powerful things for me. It fixed my insomnia. Like I had long-term insomnia and it just fixed it. It fixed my Raynaud's. Like it actually, as well as sort of all of the character development stuff and the friends that I made, the community through that, all of that, it actually had some power physiological effects upon my body. And I will always be grateful for that. And because of that, I still see that it can have a really important role as a therapeutic tool for people. I do believe that that is still part of Bikram yoga. And so because of that, I like to be able to be involved in a way that I feel that I can, I guess, redress some of the things that I think are not great about it, or just provide a little bit of a different perspective for people so that they can use this therapeutic tool more effectively for more people and for different bodies.
Yes. Yes. For different bodies. That's a really great point. Cause even just something as simple, like for a long time in my Bikram yoga practice, I just had my feet just like right next to each other. And for my hips, it turns out that was like problematic. And when I just separated my feet a little bit wider for my particular body, I could balance better. I had more like awareness of my feet. I had better balance in my, ab and abductors, just something small like that, And I think that, from what I understand, it was individuals were always like their individual needs were usually like addressed in when Bikram yoga was a smaller scene. But as it expanded and grew massively, there kind of was like, the controversial man himself almost called it like likened it to McDonald's himself. Yeah. He did that. And that's what I feel like the quality can get, diminished because we're no longer like really addressing individuals, but we are kind of just giving everybody a formula and expecting them to fit into that.
Yes. And I think, my Bikram yoga training had 400 people in it. That is absolutely massive. On the one hand, it's pretty amazing to do pranayama breathing and to be breathing in unison with 400 people. Like that is a pretty incredible experience. But you cannot, with just that size and that volume, get into things like individual variation. And I think particularly that, the development of the dialogue, of the script that's used, it was meant to bring some consistency to teachings. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I think it had a lot of unintended consequences, which is that you did lose that individualization of teaching. And also because just the trainings were just so big, in terms of the quality of the anatomy and education, it was really not that great, so you're just missing a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think this is not the whole of Bikram yoga. There are obviously very experienced and very qualified teachers who have been teaching in a way that is individualized, that is therapeutic for people. Like there always have been throughout the history of Bikram yoga, but just that as a whole, a lot of that was really missing. And that's what's really great about doing what I did. Because I just was there a couple of days ago. And one of the first things we talked about actually was the feet together thing, and about people who have valgus knees, who have knock knees, or people who have internally rotated hips, or people who just have sort of different sort of structural things that are going on in their bodies, and how to approach that and how to teach effectively for those people. That's one of the first things that we talk about, is that instruction. And it's really nice to have the opportunity to do that, so that these teachers at the very beginning of their journey are going to go out knowing that there are such things as individual variations, like their bodies are different, and that they can still teach the practice effectively without applying a one size fits all approach, or without thinking that what you're trying to do is to force every single body into this one template, that there's a blueprint somehow that everybody is meant to be returning back to, and that to just challenge that idea a little bit, that's been really valuable for me to be able to do.
Right. And as I branched out later on into other yogas and got trained in various other forms of yoga, it was interesting for me to realize that, even if they had a different flavor, there were those similar tendencies for yoga communities or yoga practices to become kind of dogmatic about a particular thing, whether it was like alignment, right? Or whether it was how the alignment for this posture is supposed to look or something, right? And then they might not be dogmatic about something else entirely. You know what I mean? There was like these different flavors of like these rules. And I feel like when we do that, we lose the ability to accept what's actually happening in this person's body and work with what's actually happening, because we're trying to we're trying to fit this into a model that might not even be relevant to this person.
That's right. It's a trap. And like, and it happens in all groups of people, doesn't it? Like I see it happen in physiotherapy too. You know, like it sort of happens and people will, you know, come upon something or have a particular approach that can be really successful and can be a really helpful tool. But then people sort of attach themselves so strongly to that. It becomes the one way and the originator of that way becomes the guru. Like guru culture happens in physio as well. Guru culture happens everywhere. And like, that's one of the traps of that, is that things can be like, there is a tendency towards dogma and there is a tendency towards then a kind of tribalistic approach to it of like, this is how we do things and this is how we are, and this is the right way. And, you know, and this sort of thing. And that is, I mean, as you say, I think you described that perfectly, because it prevents you seeing what's in front of you. It stops you from actually seeing what is there, because it's a model that once you adhere so strongly to it, you are just going to keep applying over and over again, and it actually prevents you from engaging with what's happening. And I think that's where actually curiosity is the antidote to that. Like if you are perpetually curious, then you are not always going to fall into that trap of just ascribing to a dogmatic way of viewing things, or thinking that there is one way of approaching things. There are always multiple ways of approaching different things. And I think being able to be open-minded and responsive and curious and flexible allows you to better appreciate what is actually happening in front of you and better respond to it as well too. But I also think I'm thankful to Bikram Yoga for, I had to go through that to come out the other side. Do you know what I mean? Like, and to see that, but also to, you know, that there are Bikram Yoga teachers who are not at all like that, but to sort of see this powerful coercive force, like the power of that sort of that dogmatic impulse, or, you know, the power of that guru culture, whatever, to see how that happens and to go, you know what? No, thank you. Right. that's not for me. There's a lot that I love about it, and there's a lot that I have taken from it, and it's instrumental in my development as a clinician and as a person, but actually no thank you. But then when I see it in physio, I'm like, I like that approach. Am I going to adopt that as my entire personality and clinical professional approach? No thank you. Like, you know, you can see the barriers of that tendency towards dogmatic behavior and tendency towards guru culture everywhere. Once your eyes have been opened to it, they will never be closed again.
Right. Well, and I love that, you know, some people, when, you know, I guess when they realize that that's what's happening, or they see that, there can be this like throwing the baby out with the bathwater stuff that goes on, like a rejection of it, or like a, you know, complete dismissal, like, well, now it doesn't mean anything. None of this matters now. But I love, and what I really appreciate about you is your pragmatism, because I feel like I have that too. I'm able to be like, oh, I really like this part of this. Wow, this is wonderful. That part, not for me. And it's okay to do that. Like, I feel like sometimes, you know, people don't want us to pick and choose for various reasons, but that's actually a really intelligent and wonderful thing to do, to have some discrimination, but to be also able to appreciate something, right, that is providing value while also seeing that it's not totally perfect. Right. And that's, I mean, that's something that you can carry over into just thinking about your relationships to other humans in general. Like, nobody's going to be perfect. You know, absolutely. Everybody's going to have flaws. Everybody's going to, you know, piss you off sometimes if you get close enough to them. You know what I mean? Like, it just happens, you know, but can we like see the good things and accept that? And then when the things that are not so pleasant show up, can we also accept that too, without like, you know, having to fully embrace it or something?
That's right. And I think like, it's interesting because obviously physiotherapy is an evidence-based practice, right? So, you know, we adhere to the scientific method, you know, we tend to be evidence-based in all of our treatments. But one of my colleagues is very fond of saying, you're always dealing with N of one. So, you know, sample size of one, like it's always that one person in front of you. And that to recognize that you can be guided by the evidence, and you're guided by sort of best quality of evidence that you have in terms of treatment, in terms of assessment and stuff, but you are always, always dealing with an individual human being who is not necessarily going to fit perfectly into the strict requirements of that particular study. And I think that's really important to hold on to. And I also just like, for me, that just feels like a very natural approach. Like, that just feels very obvious that like, yeah, Nobody's perfect. There is no one way. There are always these different ways to approach things, and that you can always take from here and take from there and discard that, you know, whatever. And that just feels like a very natural approach to my job, to me, and to life.
Yeah, no, and I totally relate. And, you know, that's probably, like you said, why we get along so well. But you know, what's so cool is that, you know, it was just about this time last year that, you know, we had done like a session together over Zoom, and I had shared a little bit about somatics with you. And then I reached out again and I invited you to join the cohort, and you did. And I got to have this wonderful experience of, you know, someone who had given me support and helped me in Indonesia when I was having all this difficulty with, you know, my ego and my practice and blah, blah, right? My knees, that I was able to feel kind of like a contribution to you getting to share this really awesome tool of Hannah Somatics and expose you to kind of this new way of viewing hypertonic muscles, maybe even a new way of kind of looking at the challenges with hypermobility and the reasons why our knees might bend backwards all the time and stuff like that. Would you share a little bit about how working in the program and what somatics has contributed to you on a personal level?
Yes. I mean, firstly, it was such a great thing for me to see that progression in you and where you had ended up, because when we were in Indonesia, we're sort of at this point too, where we were both trying to grapple with these things in different ways. And I guess we're at the beginning of trying to get somewhere, you know, like that we're at the beginning of this, but that it was, you know, I was with you at a time where you're having a lot of pain, a lot of frustration, a lot of confusion and a lot of difficulty. And also too, of questioning this system of yoga that had been so influential for you, but that actually was starting to feel like maybe you need a different path. Like, and that's a very interesting position to be in. And I think sometimes people can shut down to that, but you sort of fully went into it. Oh, maybe kicking and screaming, maybe dragged by your dad, whatever, but you went into it, you know, and explored and came out the other end. And it was really like, I just felt really proud of you for having gone through all of that and then ended up being in a position where you had become an expert in something that was both very restorative and extremely helpful in your own life, but you're actually able to share that with people. And I was excited for you to do that. And also too, like, I think because I trusted you, because I know that you are curious and that you do approach things in a curious way, but also not in a skeptical way, but sort of just not in an entirely credulous way, that I trusted you to know that if this was something that you were teaching and felt that was worthwhile, that it was probably legitimate, that there was actually something there that was going to be useful. And so and I was also, when we started doing it, I was at a point in time where, you know, I'd broken my hip, I'd had a big injury, I was struggling to come back from that. I still had a lot of issues going on with some hardware and stuff like that. And so I needed, and I was finding the Bikram yoga practice to be provocative, and I needed something else. I needed some kind of physical practice that I could do that was not going to be provocative and that was going to be effective for me. And so it was just the right timing to do this thing. And it was apparent immediately to me what this was and how effective it was in my own body. But also it was apparent pretty much from the beginning that I was going to be able to use this in my professional practice, and this is going to be helpful for people. And in particular, that this was like the final piece or a bridge in terms of helping people to understand what was happening in their bodies. That's a key thing. And of being able to use this as a tool to empower people to understand what was happening, but then also to be able to do something about it, which has always been a part of what I've tried to do in my work, but that this was the final little thing that I needed in order to be able to do this in a way that was, I guess, gentle and helpful, that was educational, but that was experiential. Like, it needed to have all of those components, right? Because I strongly believe that for the most part, the learning of this, like the understanding of your body, the development of better proprioception and interoception, it has to be experiential. People need to actually do it. It has to come through the body. And so that's where I think a lot of the power of this practice is. And that's where I could immediately see, once I even had the first session with you, I was like, this is going to help people who come into me.
Yes. Awesome. I love that. And, you know, that is something that, you know, when I was creating this program, I wanted to create something that would get really deep in a substantial amount of time, you know, and that's why I decided 3 months intensive, 3 months support, 6 months in entirety, because I felt like it would take that amount of time. It would take a serious dose of like 90 days of this practice to really have it sink in to somebody's consciousness, right? Obviously for you, you caught on pretty quickly that like this was something that was doing something substantial in your brain. Like you could literally feel like pathways shifting probably, right? In terms of, oh, my shoulder was here and now it's over here. It's changed position, you know, from this tiny little micro movement, right? Yeah. But for many of us, including myself, it took me quite a lot of time practicing it to really feel what can happen when my body relaxes, because we relax in layers, right? And some of the first layers, you know, are painful. They're like the layers where our pain is present. And then as we get deeper and we're not in pain anymore, there's still releasing that goes on, but it's not nearly as dramatic because it's not like, oh, I was in pain and now I'm not in pain. It's like there's a deeper relaxation that becomes more and more possible in our bodies, right? Of course, it's always the aches and pains that are going to call us back into this movement technique, because that's kind of like our body talking to us and saying, hey, it's getting a little tight back here, right? But would you share a little bit, like your clients that you've started working with, you started experimenting with using this technique with them. What did that look like?
I think initially what I started using it with was with back pain, but basically what I would call just muscle-related pain. Musculoskeletal pain, people coming in with sore backs, sore hips, sore knees, where there was no obvious other pathology or anything going on, but also with those people too. But what I found when I first started doing it, and even the most simple of exercises, like the simple arch and curl, was that it was immediately very effective in terms of symptomatic relief. Like, and what happened is you get people going, you know, we have people coming in acute back pain and they can't sleep and they can barely walk and they can't sit down and everything's uncomfortable. And then you do this tiny little thing and they get up and they can walk out and they feel better. It is transformative. Like, first of all, if you can do that very quickly in a session, you have immediate buy-in with people because you have made a change to their significant pain that they're experiencing. That I guess was the first cohort that I started using it with, but I now use it with, so I use it with neurological patients where they've got a lot of spasticity or increased tone. I use it definitely with hypermobile patients who have a lot of hypertonicity. I use it with anybody who basically has a lot of muscle tension, which is most people, but particularly with the pain stuff. And it was interesting to me how straight away it could be really effective for people, but also that people kind of understood it. The way that I use it too is that I find, so when I do it, I use a combination of like manual therapy. So, you know, massage and other kind of releases and stuff. And I can use that opportunity for when I'm doing manual therapy with people to do a little bit of education about why this is happening, why it hurts, why it's tight, what's going on. And a little bit of that just education about, you know, sensory motor amnesia, which is what somatic education talks about. But about why this might be happening. So you sort of like, while you're actually releasing muscles and giving people a bit of pain relief, you know, just sort of lay the groundwork for doing this. And then talking about how we're going to do the exercises and how they work, and then getting them to do them and getting them to feel them and giving them a bit of tactile feedback while I'm doing it, so that they know where to pay attention to in terms of feeling it and that sort of stuff. And so like, I found that it can be very successful just in one appointment to make a bit of change and give people a bit of relief. And the other thing about it that I actually think is really effective is that you don't have to do that many repetitions. But this is a key thing, because often people come in and they're sore and they're busy and they've got a lot of stuff on, and you can't give them like 20 exercises to do. But if you can give them, if you can say to them, you're going to do three of these, or you're going to do this small number of these things, but you know, you've got to try and do it once a day, that is very achievable. And that is also important, that it is an achievable thing for people to do, that they can do it and then they feel that they get relief from it. And so, again, you're going to have better buy-in with it and people are more likely to actually continue to do it because it's accessible, it's achievable, they feel relief from it. So what I started finding was, particularly with, say, acute back pain and acute musculoskeletal pain, was that I had better results more quickly using Hanasomatics than using you know, just manual therapy, or using exercises such as extension-based or function-based or whatever the other method of exercises that it was, that I would have better immediate results with that. Now, for some people that you're then going to go on to do targeted strengthening and lots of other exercises as well too, you're going to address the other things that are going on. But in a sort of like immediate putting out the fire, symptomatic relief, I found that to be incredibly effective for people.
Right. Well, if you have a hypertonic muscle, it's going to shift and change the entire way that that other exercise would be done. It's yes. going to get in the way and interfere with the functionality of that person, that area of the person's body. You know, if their hip or their glute or some part of their leg muscle is hypertonic and you're trying to get them to do a strengthening exercise, they're going to be cramping. They're going to be uncomfortable. They might not even be able to, they might feel incredibly weak because that area in their body is clenching so tight, it can't do any more contraction. It literally is at the end of its rope. And so you change that and now suddenly the whole machine is going to move.
That's right. And that's something that I often talk about with people as well too, is that when muscles are perpetually tight or perpetually contracted, they generally are weaker. They don't work as well. They can't work as effectively if they can't return to their resting length. And so they can be doing all the right things, but they're not actually going to be effective for them to by doing them. And also what happens too is that people end up with lots of compensatory muscle patterns in terms of doing exercises because they cannot use the appropriate muscles effectively. And I think actually people intuitively understand that. And a lot of time people come in and they go, I think it's muscle spasm. I think it's this. I think it's that. And they kind of know what's going on. If you can go, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's what it is. We need to deal with that first before we can start doing the strengthening and doing the mobility work and doing other stuff that we need to do. And it's interesting because oftentimes I've had people, so backs is one thing, but also I've had a lot of people with knee pain, a lot of people with hip pain coming in, and they think, oh no, I'm going to need a knee replacement because the pain is that bad. I'm going to need a knee replacement. I'm going to need a hip replacement. I can't go up and downstairs anymore. I can't, whenever I try and go up and downstairs, my leg doesn't work properly. And, you know, you do an assessment and you rule out things like, is there something wrong with the joint? Is there some, you know, significant pathology going on? And you go, actually, this is actually just incredible muscle tightness. Like that is what's happening. Like the muscles are actually just way too tight and stopping you from being able to do this effectively. And you teach them to do releases for those muscles and suddenly they can walk it up and downstairs again without pain. And you have not done anything else in terms of strengthening. I'd probably still do it too, but you don't do anything else in terms of strengthening and they can suddenly walk up and downstairs without pain and they do not think that they're going to need a hip or knee replacement. And that is actually profound.
It feels miraculous because I've definitely had clients like that who, you know, are coming to me saying, I got my hip replaced 10 years ago and I think it's wearing out again and I have to get another, you know, and we do a session and we do some psoas releases, we do some glute releases, and suddenly they are hiking, you know, they're hiking group. They're doing all their activities again. And they're not even thinking about needing a hip replacement anymore. You know, yeah. So it can be really profound. And I think it's mind blowing for a lot of people because they don't think that's how it works in terms of like, you know, if I'm having this pain, it must be because I'm getting old. It must be because, you know, my body's wearing out, rather than just there's some muscle in your body that's clenched really tight. And there is an actual way that your nervous system can unclench that muscle. And it's actually very practical and very accessible, you know, but the fact that people don't know about it, it sounds like something kind of out there, you know, but
that's right.
I mentioned before, it's neurophysiology. It's just
that's a little. Right. And I remember when I said to you, Amy, I was like, you need to tell me you need to talk neurophysiology with me. I want to understand how this works. You need to explain this to me in the nerdiest, most scientific way possible. But I think this is some of the benefit of having taught yoga for so long, is that like I already knew that just being stiff, just having incredible muscle tightness could be a significant generator of pain, because I had taught for so long and see people coming in who were so tight and watch them use a method that did actually help with some of that and get better. Like, so for me, I was like, yes, it can always be the muscles, you know, like, and okay, you have joint pain. What are the things that are acting upon the joints? what is it that loads the joints? You know, like it's the muscle. So, you know, so for me, that was not such a shocking concept. I was like, yes, I believe that actual just muscle hypertonicity can in and of itself be a significant driver of pain and reduce function and reduce mobility. That was a no-brainer to me, but I realized for a lot of people that seems like a revelation. But I was just like, yeah.
And we don't realize that our muscles stay contracted unless we release them. or unless our nervous system downregulates significantly, right? Or unless there are certain kinds of movements that we do that reciprocally inhibit those tight muscles, we don't realize that simply laying in bed at night, you know, there's these unconscious contractions going on, running all the time, wasting our energy, having us wake up stiff and tight and sore in our necks and backs, like we're working all night long, right? People wake up like that. They wake up tight and stiff and sore. But when you start turning off those unconscious habituated contractions and lower the baseline tension of your body, you wake up not stiff and tight and sore because your muscles aren't running all night long. But it's something people don't realize. I mean, I had no knowledge of this. I didn't know that my muscles were doing that, even though I knew that I was waking up in pain and I was waking up with back tension. That was clear, yeah. But it was unconscious. I didn't know that my body was doing that.
And I think too, and I think what you said before is that the narrative around, particularly around just getting older, is that, oh, you do just get tighter and you just do just get pain. And you just get more mobile and these things do get harder. And so people just sort of think, oh, this is what happens to bodies. This is what happens to human beings. You just have back pain now. You just get tight now. Well, your knees just hurt now, you know. And so there is a level that of sort of acceptance of something that I actually don't think people need to accept. Yeah. But also I think what's key and what's really profound for me about this is that it's a global solution. It's a central solution because you can work on the local tissues, you know, the local muscle, the particular muscle, the particular joints, you can work on those things. But if you don't change what's happening in the nervous system, you won't get long-term change. And you also won't get, I think the sort of the understanding of what to do. And because I now talk to people about this a lot and people do understand it. And usually when you open up that conversation, people will be like, I know that I'm always tight. I know that I always hold my tension here. When I was having that conversation with my daughter, I could feel that my shoulders were rising up. Like suddenly they start to go, oh, I can feel that some of this tension or this tightness or this pain is generated not from me doing some heavy exercise or movement, but say it's my emotional response to stuff. It's my stress response. Like it is actually coming from my nervous system. And so when people can understand that, then I think they can understand the concept behind training your nervous system to be able to actually release muscle tension and let it go and getting how that process works. Because as soon as you start talking to people about that, they're like, oh yeah, I have always been tired. I've always held my tension like this. I just find that I'm like clenching every muscle in my body. Sometimes I just find I'm really clenching my glutes and I don't know why, you know, like suddenly they go, oh yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, you realize that you're creating it. It gives you back your power because you realize that there is a way to undo it. If you're doing it, there must be a way that you can stop doing it, right? Or that you can train yourself to do something else.
Yes, it's massively empowering for people. Instead of like just things that have just been inflicted upon them, or it's just a natural part of aging or like being in a human body, but that actually it is something you can learn to voluntarily control. You can change, you can become aware of it, and then you can actually change it. And that is extremely empowering. But also that you can do it in the moment and you can do it in ways that are really gentle and feel good to do and aren't painful.
Painful. It can be even pleasurable if you get, you know, if you really get into it in the moment, releasing your neck, letting that tension dissipate and letting that stress pattern integrate back into your body feels good. It feels really good. And that can be a thing that, you know, some people aren't used to in the beginning. They're not used to it feeling good to let go. They're used to it being kind of painful and difficult and scary to let go. Right.
Yes.
And so there's a whole retraining of that as well that people get to experience in this work, is retraining themselves to actually feel relief from letting go.
Yes. And I think often too, particularly with physio exercises, people come in expecting that you're going to inflict pain upon them. Not everybody, but some people, they think they're going to get like a really mean, like SOS release kind of massage or something like that. And like, I still sometimes do use those techniques, that's for sure. Or they think that they're going to have to do like lots of like glute bridges or like really difficult exercises. And then you go, I'm going to give you this very gentle thing that shouldn't hurt. Like, and if it hurts a bit, we're going to adjust it. And they're like, what? Like that can be sometimes a big paradigm shift for people, because they're expecting that it's actually going to be very hard and that it's possibly going to be painful. But I also really like that, because I don't necessarily like inflicting pain upon people. And I am really glad that I can have an option that is not painful for people to do and that actually feels good for them. And I also think it teaches people to be more gentle with their bodies and with themselves overall. And I think that in itself is a very valuable thing to give to people and to allow people to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been hugely transformative for me to learn how to be gentle with myself and how to be tender with myself. And when I'm in pain, instead of being like, instead of that, like, how can I go, oh, sweetie, what's the matter? Can I help you? What do you need? You need some water? You're tired? Oh, let's go to bed. You know, instead of how I used to be with myself, you know, which was a different kind of nervous system response that I was having, right? It was a different kind of conditioning. And so there's a whole repatterning that we get to go through with this work that is, you know, just, it goes beyond, you know, pain relief on a physical level, you know. And it's interesting because I remember when you were in the program and you're starting to use these methods with your clients, you were giving us some really fascinating anecdotes and telling some stories. And there was a particular one, I don't know if you're comfortable sharing it, it was really interesting, about a woman who said that this exercise you gave her a nightmare.
That's right. I'm laughing about it because it was such an interesting conversation, but it was just actually the most simple, gentle exercise ever, just a little arch and curl for your spine. And when she came in and she said to me that the exercise gave her a nightmare. It gave her a nightmare about something that had happened to her, which was many years ago, which was one of the first times that she injured her back, where she was cleaning a gas oven and it exploded and it threw her into a refrigerator and her back hit a refrigerator handle and she actually injured her back. And she was, you know, she came in and she was like, oh, you know, I don't like this. Like this exercise, you know, it gave me this nightmare. And I was just like, isn't that amazing that by doing this small movement, you remembered this thing that had happened to your body and you've now reacquainted yourself with this sort of initial trauma that had happened that you had so forgotten about that we didn't even talk about it in terms of your back pain. It didn't even come up, even though I'd asked you about injuries and all the rest of that sort of thing. Like, isn't that fascinating? And she actually, we came around to it and she was sort of, you know, it ended up being a really productive thing, you know, for her that she'd had this. But basically, she had unlocked this bit of tension that had been there for so long in her body that it allowed her to access this memory of this significant trauma that she had sustained many, many years ago at what was really the origin of her long-term chronic back pain. I just found that to be so fascinating. And I thought when she first started talking, I thought, oh, she's going to, you know, I thought, oh no, I've lost her now. Like she's going to be like, I'm never doing the exercises again. But she wasn't. She was like, is there a way that I can do that exercise on my side? Is there a way that I can do this differently? And I was like, there absolutely is, fantastic. And she's kept doing them. Really interesting. She, like, I thought, oh no, like, oh no, I made you have a nightmare. And now you're going to be like, I'm never doing these again. But actually not at all. Not at all. She saw the value in doing them. And we figured out ways that we can modify them so she could do it. But it was just this really fascinating result. This very simple, tiny exercise.
Yeah. Well, you're unlocking something that was locked up from experience, not just that experience, but there were layers of experience, but that sounds like a pretty extreme, pretty intense one that was part of that, you know, back pain that she was experiencing. And when you let that go, there's going to be, you know, for some people, it might be memories or emotions, or, you know, they might even realize or have a completely new perspective on a time in their lives and what was really going on then, because it's just been sitting in their body kind of dormant, kind of clenched up, you know, like our nervous system and our brain is very smart. And it's just like, oh, there's too much going on and we can't deal with all of this. We're just going to put it down here. We're just going to store it in that cupboard over there in my right hip, you know, and we'll get to that eventually someday. Right. And then the cupboard just keeps getting more and more full of stuff until, you know, you're weighed down by that right hip. And it's like, you know, heavy with all of the contractions of everything that happened that you kept putting there in that cupboard. Right. And so then with anisomatics, we start taking that stuff out. And that's where that lightness comes in. That's where that feeling of like being light on your feet, you know, waking up and you feel refreshed instead of like you've been running a marathon all night long.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's such a It's a way in, and it's another opportunity to talk about these things that affect human beings and affect your physical body without being like, tell me about your stress, you know, because these things are always a factor, because we are complete beings, you know, because we, like, these things are not separate. We are always sort of living emotional and intellectual and physical and spiritual lives. All of these things are parts of us, and they're all going to impact upon every aspect of our lives. And when people do have these revelations, or, you know, they do find there was another person that I treated who did realize she was in a normal simple interaction with a member of her family, and she felt the tension creeping up, and she was like, oh, and she realized what it was related to in terms of her relationship with this person, and how she always had this very intense physical response to any interaction with him and where it came from and stuff. And it opens it up, and it doesn't mean that I'm going to go beyond my scope and start going into psychology or whatever, but it opens up to just have these conversations with people about where they realize where this stuff has come from and how that has manifested in their bodies, and then they can just let go of it, you know. And it doesn't need to be this big thing. They realize it, oh, it's there, oh, that's okay, I get it, I can let go of that. And, like, you know, that can be a part of treatment as well, without having to steer anything in that direction. It just comes up naturally because people are starting to have these revelations about the tension that they hold in their body and the way that they hold stress in their body, and as you say, the layers of that sort of stress in their body.
I love that. I love that, you know, I get to hold space for whatever someone brings up as a result of this work, but it doesn't require me to be a therapist or have any answers. You know, they're the ones with the answers. They're the ones who are coming with the, I just realized this thing, and I get to receive and be present for that. And I get to listen to them as they, you know, process and realize this connection, and just be there to affirm them. And that, you know, that was a big part of my training, because my mentor, Eleanor Criswell Hanna, she is a licensed psychotherapist, and she would get, you know, every single training, she would talk about scope of practice, and she would talk about, you don't have to have answers for people. You don't have to be a therapist unless you're actually a therapist and you want to do that as you do your Hanna Somatics. You can do your Hanna Somatic, you know, education with people and just be human. You can just be a human and do it with them, without having to add these other aspects of feeling like an authority on mental health or something, right? Or on how they should be processing this.
That's right. And as I said to you before, this is part of that experiential learning, you know, with people. Like, what happens is they experience it themselves. They have the revelations themselves. They suddenly make the connections themselves. And you are just merely there allowing that to happen. Like, co-creating the space for them for that to happen, and then allowing that to happen for them to have those revelations. And all you need to do is just be with it, you know, and acknowledge it. That then that's it. And so, like, I never feel like I'm in danger of going outside of my scope or I'm out of my depth, because you're just relating to them as a human being, but they are having all of those revelations and those sort of understandings of themselves that are happening. And you're just kind of there for it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it's really special. I definitely enjoy it. I'm so pleased. I mean, we haven't really caught up for a while, so this podcast is almost like a catching up to see, like, how far you've come. And I mean, I already know, like, how brilliant and smart you are, and so I love that you're just utilizing this tool in, you know, I'm sure just a really wonderful way with your clients. And, you know, what I love about anybody who goes through the Radiance program is you're going to know these movements, and you're going to know the principles of somatics so deeply, because you practice it so much in the program, you know, and you experience a daily or near daily practice, right? People who go through the program, that you become, in a way, a natural somatic educator. Because when you come across a person in your life who is having a little pain or having some involuntary contraction in their leg or their back, you want to say something. You're like, hey, try this. Hey, this could help you. And you just show them, because you know it in your body. And that's what I really think that this work was ultimately intended for, you know, as far as I understood from the training that I went through, is not that this is a commodity or, you know, a trademark style of something that's, like, specific. This is actually just educating people about a natural functioning of their nervous system that they just didn't know was there.
Yes. And yes, I think that's exactly right. And I think what I also to like about it is that, as well as, you know, knowing and sort of having absorbed the movements into my body, if you have an understanding of the body and of anatomy, there are many options in terms of the movements. If you understand the principles, then you understand how it works and what you're trying to do. I've come up, you know, with individualized movements for people to target areas that I think they need to target. And so, you know, it's inherently very flexible and adaptable. As we were talking about right at the beginning, it's very able to be individualized. It's not a script, like, because it is actually, it's just an understanding of basically how your body works in a fundamental way. And so because of that, you can apply it to anyone and to any particular muscle tightness or, you know, or problem, whatever. And so it's inherently very versatile, rather than just being like, okay, you have to, there's a prescription and you do this particular movement and you do it, you know, this many times, and you only ever do this and you do this together and you do that, whatever.
When you're doing it wrong, by the way, you're doing it wrong
and that's not right, you know, like, whatever. And so, like, there's so, and also too, to be able to go, okay, for this person, they actually need to do this a little bit differently. They need a pillow here. They need this, that, there. They need to do a smaller movement. They need to, like, change themselves in a little bit of position. So it's very responsive. And I think also too, as a practitioner, it also helps you to be able to be responsive in that way. And they go, okay, this isn't quite doing what we want it to do. How do we modify it? How are we going to make this so it's effective for you, so that you can feel and understand how it's working and that it is working, you know? So rather than just trying the same movement over and over again and not really getting anywhere. But I think that's what I like about it, because in that sense, like, you can avoid those traps of being dogmatic. You can avoid those traps of being like, you know, this is the one way. There is only this one way to do it. And you don't, you just keep prescribing this my same way, because you go, once you understand the fundamental idea that's at the heart of anisomatic education, you can then apply it to anyone in any way, based upon where they are in that moment in time. And then 6 months down the track or a year down the track, you can do different things with them again. You know what I mean? And I find that, and also too, what I find is that, you know, there are some people for whom I have a whole suite of exercises, a program that I've given them. Sometimes they will do that whole suite of exercises every day. Sometimes we'll do that, you know, for a period of time. And then we go, okay, so if this problem starts happening again, you know that you do this one, you know that you have this tool. If you know, if your hip is getting tight again, if your neck is getting tight again, these are the ones that they know that can go, oh, this is happening. I know that I can then apply this one. So they have them as tools that they can then use, and they can mix and match. They can do one quick one if they just need to, you know, they can do the full thing if they need to do it, because they feel like everything is mounting up again. So you have then this whole repertoire of things that people can do and tools they can do. And if you've done your job properly, they understand and they can pick and choose and they can do it. But then I've also can be like, you know, down where I am, I've got lots of people who are dairy farmers and laborers and stuff like that, who do very intense physical jobs and are up at 3 o'clock in the morning because they've got to go milk cows and stuff. And they do not have the time to do a daily practice that is, you know, like 30 minutes long or even 15 minutes long. They don't. But if you can go, here's one thing that I can give you to do, and you can just do it 3 times, and it will be enough to take away the pain and the tension, and then you can go back out and milk cows and do all of your work around the property. That's amazing. They will take that and they will do that. You know, like, so that's what I like, the versatility of it, the fact that you can individualize it, it can be responsive to people in the moment and over time. Like, I think that's like what's quite unique and what's really wonderful about anisomatic education as a tool.
Awesome. Yes. And, you know, part of what's wonderful about that, like, curiosity versus judgment, or, you know, having this deterministic view about the body or our bodies, right, is that when somebody is doing a movement, like, say I'll instruct a movement and they do something totally different, they do something else, I've started going, oh, wow, that muscle that did that movement must be the one that we need to work with. if that was your interpretation, you know, of the movement, sometimes that's a cue that's the muscle that really was ready to do this. That was actually, so I like to tell people, I'm like, there isn't a wrong way to do this. There's just, you know, looking at what muscle needs to be addressed first, you know, yeah. And in anisomatics, we always work with the tightest muscle first. Yeah. Because you unravel that one, and then all the other muscles are going to be able to move a little bit easier, you know. I love how deeply you've absorbed this, and You know, I tell that to people sometimes when they're asking about the program and they're asking about, is it a certification? And I let them know, you know, I'm not really at the place right now that I'm ready to create a certification program to certify people in this work because it's extensive. And I don't want to give anybody something that's subpar. To tell someone that they can become a Hannah Somatic Educator full blown in the way that I was trained in 6 months is not true. You know, it's a 3-year program that I went through, and it's, you know, 9-day learning modules twice a year. And then you do a bunch of clinical work in between those 6-month periods, you know? And so for me to create that is a feat. And I mean, I'm up to it. I'm working on it. It's going to happen over time that, you know, my father and I will create something like that. But in the meantime, what I'm offering and what you've received very obviously is that if you do this with your own body, for an extended period of time, you will know this in such a way as you can share it with others naturally. Yeah. You know, whether you are a yoga teacher, whether you're a physical therapist, whether you're a mental health counselor or, you know, a psychotherapist, this has a lot of applications. And when you know it deeply in your own body, it's better than having a paper that says you learned it at some point. To be completely frank, I did not have a daily practice, and I did really not even know what was possible for my own body in this work while I was in the training. While I was in the training, I was still struggling with that. I was still struggling with my ego. I was still struggling with wanting to identify myself as the yoga teacher and not some other thing. And I didn't really get it until about a year after I had graduated from my training that I finally got myself into a daily practice and was like, holy crap. This does something really particularly special that I didn't even really know. You know, and how many times do people do that? They go to a yoga training and they deep dive into the yoga for, you know, a couple of days or a month and a half, you know, but they don't take it on for like half a year daily in their own body. But then they're transmitting it, they're teaching it to other people when they still are in a process of discovery within themselves. And there's nothing wrong with being in that process of discovery, but it's a lot different than having a foundation.
Yes, I think that's true. And like, yeah, you can, I think, and again, that comes back to the experiential learning aspect of it, doesn't it? You know, because when you fully absorb something like that, and when you, it actually becomes a part, like, of who you are in some fundamental way, you are just going to, I think, transmit that a lot better to people. It's going to become this sort of natural thing that does. This is something I have to say that I also really like about the Hannah Somatics, in the sense that, and I would consider doing the certification at some point down the track. I do a lot of professional development, and but that'd be down the track. I consider doing it more because of my curiosity than anything else. Like, that if you and your dad did one, I would totally do it. And if you came and did some hands-on stuff, you know, somewhere down in the Southern Hemisphere, like, I would be very interested to learn about the hands-on technique. So, like, I think that would all be really useful. But what I really like about it was that, like, there wasn't this sense of, like, ownership about it. And you weren't like, no, you can't go forth and be doing this. Like, you know, like, there's the generosity. There's a sense of, like, yes, this is for everybody. Like, everybody should be able to use it. Of course, you can start using it with your patients straight away. Like, of course, you should be, like, sharing this with people who are doing it, you know. Like, I think that's actually a really valuable thing. And I think that's another way that you avoid the guru trap and the dogma trap, you know, by going, this is just, like, an understanding of how your body works. It's a gift for everybody. Like, it's everybody's birthright, you know, like, just go forth and share it with the world, rather than being like, no, this is, like, you know, Amy Takaya trademark, like, you cannot infringe upon my copyright, like, rather than this sort of like, you know, miserly kind of, like, petty view of knowledge of these things, you know, like,
and, you know, of course. And there's this fine balance too of, like, because I'm naturally a very generous person, and, you know, I can even liken that to my hypermobility. Like, I have been so empathic or whatever in the past that I don't know, and, you know, we could totally talk about that in terms of, like, what, you know, certain kinds of trauma due to our nervous systems. And then suddenly we don't have boundaries between, like, ourselves and others. And if that stuff goes on early in childhood, like, that's a whole nother podcast, right? But I've definitely had to discover, like, boundaries within myself, because I will just give and give and give. And so even though I'm not being proprietary or, like, miserly about the Hannah Somatics, I've had to learn through this process in the last 2 years of doing this work that, like, oh, with my own personal energy and, like, the time and the energy that I spend on creating this, on teaching, on, you know, investing in the people that hire me, like, I do need to have some kind of, like, you know, monetary and energetic boundary with that stuff, while also feeling free to share this technique far and wide and let people know that it's there. You know, so it's been this really interesting balance of learning for me of how to have those appropriate boundaries and still let myself be just as generous as I feel my heart wants to be, you know, let everybody know about it.
I think that's a really important point. I think that a couple of things strike me about that. So first of all, too, like if you do not have adequate proprioception and interoception, you don't have a sense of where your body's in space and you don't have a sense of boundaries. Like even before, you know, talking about trauma and stuff like that, you just sort of don't. And so part of actually developing better body awareness and better mind, emotional, spirit, body connection, part of becoming more integrated is being able to have more of a sense of boundaries and having a better sense of in yourself when those boundaries are being infringed upon. Not that anybody's doing, you know, anything deliberate, but when enough is enough, when you actually do need to draw some boundaries, when you do need to take time to rest, when you do need to pull back from it, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think that's part of actually the practice, is that it gives you a better awareness of when you are being stretched too far, you know, literally and figuratively, when you're being stretched too far and when you actually need to do that. And I think that's actually really important as well too. And I think that's been important for me, because I see a lot of patients, you know, and it's a lot of people energy, which I love, but I also actually, I'm now much better at going, no, I need quiet time. Like, you know, like I, you know, like when I get to the weekend and, you know, say for this weekend, this has been a fairly people heavy weekend, but then this afternoon, I'm just going to completely relax. I'm going to do the recording from yesterday. You know, like I'm just going to have some restorative time, because I'm better able at being able to go, I love all that stuff. And I love that people energy. I love going and teaching the teacher trainees. Like I love my job and the people, but that I also need time to recharge in and of myself. I cannot keep doing that energy out, because it's actually not healthy or productive for me. And I'm a better person overall, not just better at my job, but actually a better person overall. And I am better in myself overall if I establish some boundaries around that. And that's important. And I think also too, in terms of, you know, and I, like in terms of what you create and the time and energy you put into that, you know, we live in a world where, like, unfortunately, life energy is often measured in dollars. Like, you know, you need to make money in order to survive. This is a true thing. Like, you need to be able to do that. That is important. And so, like, you need to actually be able to value yourself appropriately and value your expertise appropriately, and value what you're providing for people appropriately. And that's really challenging. And I'm in a good position because I don't have to make any of those decisions, right? Like I work for a practice and they decide how much we charge, and I just la 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 do my job. And I do not have to be confronted by any of that, which is a relief for me, because I would find that very challenging. You know, yeah. And so that it is very challenging, because, like, especially if you, like, you're driven to do this because you want to help people. You know, that's it. That's the basis of it. And you want to share that with people. And it can be very hard sometimes to put a monetary value upon that, but you actually have to, because.
Yeah. And it's not just for me, but for other people. It was crazy. I mean, I was for, like, let's see, during my training, I was teaching somatic movement classes, like every week, twice a week. Sometimes I was integrating it with my yoga classes. Right. And then during COVID, I was teaching a Zoom class for free online every week for months and months. And then I was teaching at a yoga studio, a somatic class once a week, that my dad passed off to me, because he was like, oh, they don't pay me enough, I don't want to teach it. And I was like, I'll teach it for like $20 an hour and pay a babysitter $25 and not make any money. Like I was still just feeling so generous with myself that I didn't realize, oh, this is actually kind of not smart, you know? Yeah. Of my but it was also just like wanting to share this work. And so, you know, people would come, I would have like two people in class because they didn't really know what it was, right? And it wasn't a workout. So what were they, you know, and they didn't know what somatics was. I would teach these Zoom classes and I would invite all these people, and nobody, I would have like two people in my Zoom class, or maybe three people, you know, in my Zoom class. When I started charging more, people started valuing this work differently. When I started charging more and then making a statement like, this will make your back pain disappear, you know, and I can confidently say that because I've made my back pain disappear that was plaguing me for 7 years of my life with this method, You know, it may take your nervous system a bit of time depending on what the issue is and how you're handling stress in your life. But, you know, when I started making that statement and pairing it with a price tag, then people were suddenly paying attention. You know, will people pay that kind of attention when it's free? I don't know, because it didn't seem to be working that well when it was free. You know, people were sort of not noticing it.
So the thing that reminds me of is the story of when Bikram first started teaching yoga in LA, and he did it for free. Have you heard this story? You surely have. So when Bikram first started teaching yoga, he just did it for free because that's what he knew. You know, that's what his guru did. That's what he did. Like, he just, you know, you share yoga with the world and you just, you know, teach and teach and teach, and you teach many classes and you give it away for free. And the, you know, whether this is apocryphal or not, who can say? But the story that I've heard multiple times is that Shirley MacLaine, the actress, started doing the yoga, and she came to me and she said, Bikram, you can't give it away for free. People will not value it. You have to give people an opportunity to pay for it and to value it in the way that our society knows how, which is through money, essentially. And so then he started charging for yoga and people started to come more, and it really changed it. But that immediately just makes me think of that, of like, you know, that like way back when Bikram was still, you know, young and green and new to it, that his impulse was to give this, you know, wonderful thing that he had away. But then he realized that he had to charge for it. But so I think like that is important as well too, in terms of valuing your expertise and your time, and what you're actually providing and giving to people. And, you know, one of the ways, and one of the predominant ways that we show that we value something in our society, how it works, is by paying people for it. Because you need to be able to survive and to live. And you can't just give your life away energy for free, you know, like your life energy away for free. You need to actually be able to be rewarded and to have something back for it. There needs to be an exchange as well too, in terms of that. Yeah.
And the investment that, you know, I realized, like, you know, because it took me such a great amount of time and pain and struggle to develop a daily practice, which is what ultimately like changed my body on a very deep level. And it's not to say that all the times that I was practicing before and all the sessions that I did during my training and stuff like that, they all had an impact, but the turning point was doing it every day for 15 or 20 minutes. That was what really started to shift things for me in a major way, you know, really deeply, you know, because then at that point, like things are just like, like a cavalcade, like of change just came, because I'd been primed this way this whole time, right? But I asked myself that question, like, how do I get someone to do that? How do I get someone to commit to making a new habit in their body? You know, because we all have good intentions to create a new habit, but if somebody is financially invested in it, perhaps that will be the thing that encourages them to get the most out of it, you know?
It's true. And it, like, it's also in the same way that, you know, if you buy a gym membership, and well, lots of people leave their gym membership lapse, but if it's coming out every month, but I think it's the combination of the financial commitment, but also the accountability for having a regular sort of meeting with someone who is actually there for and with you, right? You know, like people can get like their gym membership lapse because nobody's going to notice that they didn't swipe their card into the gym. But, you know, like making the financial commitment, but then also the personal commitment as part of that, that they're going to show up and they're going to have their meeting with you, like, and they commit to that consistency of it. Like, it's the same in terms of, you know, I see people in their practice and we make a follow-up appointment, and people usually want a follow-up appointment because they want to have to come and say to me, like, I did them or I didn't, you know, like, but then it's another way of like being accountable to themselves until they have built the self-discipline, until they've built the practice into their body, until it's become part of their life, that there is the external accountability as well too. And one way to achieve that is that they've made a financial commitment. And the other way to achieve that is that they've made a commitment. They're going to show up to you and say, hi, Amy, you know, and you're going to say, how did it go? And they'll be like, oh, I did it, you know, 3 days this week or whatever, you know, like that's also part of it. I think those two things are actually important. It's the relationship as well as the financial commitment that, you know, that makes it work. Does that make sense? Like,
oh yeah, because I've been thinking, and I'm actually in process of creating like a self-paced course, not of the Radiance program particularly, but for the Cat Stretch series or for the basic fundamental Hanasomatic movements that can kind of get somebody going with the principles. you know, and offer it at a lower price point. But I don't want to just like do that and be done with it. I want to do that and then have an add-on of allowing them to join like a live 6-week course twice a year. That's the idea I have right now, at least, that they can buy this thing and they can try going through it and they can start getting the benefits from it. They can start experimenting with it. But then they also have this option for, again, at a reasonable price point, to join a 6-week live version of the course so that they can get feedback, so that they can answer questions, so that they can have group energy, so that they can get guidance. Because there's so many things that they're not necessarily going to get just by going through some videos, even with, you know, the best way that I could possibly explain something, someone's going to, you know, have a different experience than what maybe is intended, right?
That's right. And I also, as much as this is, you know, it's an internal practice and it's this sort of individual practice, but also part of the way that we understand ourselves in the world is through relationship. And I think that that is also what was really valuable about the Radiance program, was having the regular meetings and chances and opportunities to talk to you and also to the other people who are going through the program, who are processing what was happening to them, and then being able to process what was happening within you in relationship to what they were saying as well too. I think that's an integral part of it, because we're not islands, you know, we're not like just like solitary little creatures, you know. And so I think that is also an important part of it too, is that while a lot of the practice itself is this sort of solo internal thing, but that there's an important part of the experience that is about being able to share that and being able to contextualize it through discussing it with other people and through doing it with other people and through hearing about other people's revelations and what they go through as well too. And I think that that sense of community or that sense of growth through these little relationships with people is also important too. And I think in the same way that, you know, this would happen with yoga, is that people, you know, you teach yoga and far beyond just the physical changes that people like that occur with people, people come and they'll say, you know, like, oh, my husband sent me to yoga today because he knew that if I didn't go to yoga, you know, like I was just, you know, I was going to be a crazy person, whatever it was. But also too, that people would find that they had better relationships with their kids and with their partners. People would find that they would leave relationships that weren't serving them anymore. Like people, like, was these sort of interpersonal consequences of having these personal changes. And I think that's the other component of it as well too, like, and that's another component of, you know, of who we are, like, as people too.
Right, we get more in touch with what's true, we get more in touch with ourselves, and then we start operating from that place instead of a place of being externalized and not really focused on what we're experiencing and what's going on inside of our bodies. Absolutely. You know, I would love, you know, as we're wrapping up here, if you would share a little bit about, you know, where you started with your neck, with your back, with your shoulders, when we were beginning the program, you know, what was partially motivating you was the pain relief, right, from the tension you were carrying. And then how does that look now? How does it look now to have this tool, and how do you use it?
Yeah, so, I mean, when we first started, I had lots of chronic sort of neck pain and back pain for a long time. And some of that is because I am hypermobile, and so hypermobile people have a tendency towards having hypertonicity of movement muscles because the smaller stabilizing muscles don't work so well. So I had a lot of just built up hypertonicity of my neck muscles over time. But I'd also had, you know, significant trauma a few years ago when I broke my hip, and that had set off a cascade of sort of muscle tightness in response to that I could not get rid of. Like, I could not get rid of it with yoga. I couldn't exercise it away. I knew that it was there, and I could feel that it was there, and I could feel this sort of groiny pain that I knew was not joint pain. I knew that it was hip flexor muscle related pain, but I couldn't find anything that would actually get rid of it, which was immensely frustrating. And so, you know, one of the things that happened to me very early on was that I realized that I could modify that, which had been bothering me for about 5 years. So I could actually get rid of that groiny kind of hip pain. And I could actually get rid of my habitual neck pain. And so from that, I started to just be able to feel that I could walk more freely and I could move more freely, but I was not getting, you know, the headaches and just the sort of like fogginess and the accumulated tension of having the constant neck pain. And so doing a daily practice was really helpful for me. I sometimes go off and on with that because I'm a human being and I don't always like do my daily practice, because sometimes I work 10-hour days and I'm just tired and I don't do it. But what will usually happen then is that I will have this buildup of tension and I will go, oh, I really need to do that again. I can get rid of it. And I think we were talking about this in one of the Radiance meetings, is that sometimes what will happen is I'll get to the end of the day and I'll be in bed and I'll be like, oh, I'm uncomfortable in bed. This is dumb. And then I will do my practice in bed before I go to sleep, because I'll be like, oh, okay. Like it is, like it's now, it's sort of reached that point again where I can feel like it's building, it's going to be a problem. So for some of it, like for some of the pain, I feel like I've mostly cleared that and doesn't come back very much. For some of it, I haven't fully released that pattern. Like that pattern is just going to keep coming back. And so I need to keep like putting out spot fires until like I can recommit again to doing a daily practice that I know will like fundamentally change it over time. But the other thing is that I can be forgiving with myself about that, because we're not perfect, you know. Like it would be nice if I could say, oh, Amy, since I last spoke to you, like I practice every day and I've completed, but I just haven't. Yeah, I haven't been able to. There's been stuff that's happened.
That's part of the learning. That really is. Yeah. And that's what I try to like let people understand too, you know, is that this is a skill that you gather, that you learn, and you're never going to be starting at square one again. Like your body has learned how to do this. And so anytime that you come back to the practice, even if it's been a few days, even if it's been a couple of weeks since you did like a deep, longer practice for yourself, when you go into it, you're going to come into it with all the experience of doing this in the program. That's one of the big features of the program, honestly, is that you get this concentrated time to build these pathways. And yeah, okay, if you don't use it, you lose it. But you know, your body's going to let you know that it wants this. It's going to let you know, you know.
And I also find that it's actually much easier for me to release it in the moment now, because I had actually done that period of concentrated practice and because I did have a daily practice for a period of time. And so like even sometimes at work, if I've, you know, had a heavy day of treating lots of people and I think, oh, you know, like I'm starting to feel, because that's often a trigger for it as well as doing lots of manual therapy and stuff. I get tight through my shoulders and through my neck. And if I sort of start to feel like that's building up, I can then actually just quickly do a few things that I know will release it in the moment. Yeah. And my body's much more responsive to it because I've done the sort of work of the daily practice, and it's never gone back up to the level that it was when I first saw you. It's never gone up to there. It's more, and I think also too, I'm more sensitive to it now. And so as it's starting to build, I can catch it earlier rather than it getting to the point where I'm like, oh no, now everything's really tight.
Yeah. You nip it in the bud because you're aware of it going on. And so then you're noticing it when it's happening and you can do something about it to intervene early.
That's right. And usually when that happens and I'm going, oh, I've had a couple of times this week where I've had to do like a quick sort of like reset, then I'll go, I need to do like a full cat series, or I need to do like a deeper practice sort of this week because things are starting to build up again. And the other thing that I'm doing too, I've just started, there's a 24-hour gym that's just opened up very close to me, which is fantastic. But I actually like to use it as part of like my warm-up and cool down at the gym. And that's another way. So if I'm doing like a full kind of lower length strengthening program, then I always do a bit of somatics to start and I always do a bit of somatics to finish.
That's so perfect.
And
that's another way to hold on to the patterns that you created when you're going to get the strengthening without getting hypertonic muscles that are, you know, still doing squats after you're done squatting.
That's right. And it means that I don't get the DOMS in the same way. I don't get the delayed onset muscle soreness. So like it's actually really interesting how that works in terms of like you do the strengthening and you get the strengthening effects, but I actually don't get the sort of like gym related pain later on from doing it. But it's another way that it is just sort of woven into my life in a way that makes sense for me, rather than being like, oh, I've got to do it at 6 a.m. every day. Like it's actually just not feasible for me to do it because I've got a shifting schedule and it doesn't always work. But if I sort of go, I know that I'm going to be going to the gym 3 times a week, I'm definitely going to be doing this. And then I'm going to be doing my little bits and pieces at work when I realize, oh, I'm getting tense through my shoulders because I'm doing all this manual therapy. So like it's I'm able to weave it into my life in a way that is actually effective for me and allows me to be consistent without necessarily being perfect, but still have the consistency of it. And I think that's important. But I think that's also like what's so great about it being so versatile is that you can be like, oh, I'm going to do like my 30 seconds, let's sort my neck out, or I'm going to do 20 minutes, or I'm going to redo the recording of a class that we've done at some other time and actually do like a full 90-minute sort of practice because I have the time and I feel like I need it. So, you know, like that, I really like that aspect of it. And compared to say something like, you know, again, love Bikram yoga, but compared to Bikram yoga where I'd have to drive, you know, 20 minutes and be in a 90-minute class and then shower and then get out, like, so where I'd have to do like 3 hours, you know, essentially to do that practice, like I can just be like, okay, 30 seconds here, 10 minutes there, need to do like an hour later, like there's just so much more versatility to it. And I think that makes it so much more achievable. and so much more effective over the longer term because you've got this versatility of ways that you can do the practice.
I love to, you know, I mean, we've done that, you know, in every iteration of the Radiance program, we do not as much of this as we do the lying down stuff, because there's something about just letting your body be totally relaxed on the floor that's so therapeutic. But we do sitting movements, we do standing movements for you to feel into the way that this can be done in any position at any moment in time, so that exactly what happened, it can be integrated into your daily experience in your body, so that your body remembers to let go, instead of what most people are experiencing is their bodies are continuing to clench tighter and tighter as time goes on. Instead, your nervous system is initiated in the releasing of tension and the letting go process. And what I've discovered, I mean, on an experiential level, I knew this, but I've recently put this into words, and it's an interesting thing, you know, to like think about on a neurophysiological level. If we do any movement, and this is more seen when you're like having someone lay on the floor, right? And say you have them do a psoas release where they lift their straight leg an inch or so, and then they super slowly bring it down. Their entire body actually works to do that. And some people will tell me, oh, my jaw clenched when I lifted my leg, you know, or my face kind of contracted when I lifted my leg, you know, or I felt my butt engage on that. Am I supposed to feel that? And I'll always tell them, yes, your entire body is doing this movement. Your entire body is involved in these movements. And that's really cool, because it means that the more that you practice this, your entire body relaxes more and more and more. And that's actually one of the kind of secrets to this method in terms of how it is so effective for pain relief, is that you just keep initiating release, release, release. And it always is releasing the whole body. Even if those tight spaces are not quite ready to release yet, over time with consistency, they start to release. And that's what I experienced in a daily practice when I finally committed to that, was that these stubborn areas that just weren't going away, you know, through the other ways that I was practicing, just started melting away and being gone and not showing up every morning.
And that's, I think what's powerful about it is that you have a global effect as well as a local effect. You know, you work on the entire system because you're working with your nervous system. And so you can lower your overall kind of like nervous tone, essentially resting tone, as well as the sort of individual muscle groups in the areas. Like, that's what's so profound about it. And I think too, like in terms of like neurological rehab, when we talk about neurological rehab, as well as having sort of specific, you know, intentional high repetition practice, you also need incidental practice throughout the day. Like that's also like a fundamental part of neuro rehab training. And that's where that thing of like, you know, and I often give to people who have neck pain and whatever and work in offices, is giving them chair exercises and things that they can just do throughout the day, so that they have the combination of a dedicated practice time that is specific, that, you know, is targeted, that's repetitive, but they also have this incidental practice throughout the day, because that's actually how you change the pathways. That's actually how you change the brain and the nervous system over time, is a combination of the two. Not just you go to a space dedicated to this and you do this practice, but that it's interwoven through your life. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm just so happy right now listening to you talk about this, that like, I have like achieved that. I have achieved that through the creation of this program, because honestly, in the beginning, it was all intuitive. I was just like, it's going to be 6 months and I guess it's going to cost this much. And I guess I'm going to do that. And then as I was running the first few rounds, I'm like, well, this is different than how I was doing it last time. I'm going to just go with this, you know, and it's been an intuitive process. But hearing, you know, this kind of feedback from you and listening to, you know, you talk about it, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, there is like an intelligence to how this ended up being in this particular way. And it's obviously linked to, you know, my own practice of hanasomatics and how it's shown up in my body and how it's, you know, been intended by the people that trained me to be shared. You know, that showed up intuitively in my creation of this without, you know, specifically planning it. So I'm happy about that. I'm very happy about that. Wonderful. Well, you know, it's been absolutely such a pleasure to catch up with you, to talk to you, to hear about some of the experiences that you've been having with this work. I'm so excited for how you'll continue to integrate this. I cannot wait to do a hands-on session with you someday, because you'll get so much out of that and you'll add that to your repertoire of skills, because it's a beautiful thing. In so many words, we're basically, with the hands-on work, we're just increasing the biofeedback of what's actually happening. which I think I've explained to you before, and which you've experienced a little bit with the jaw work, right? But there's a whole kind of like handling with it that is very unique and special. So something to look forward to, everybody in the world who might be interested in that. Because it's getting rarer and rarer. There's not as many people out there doing the hands-on work. So I'll definitely be considering Bali, perhaps, because that's close to you.
Just come to the Southern Hemisphere. That's right. If you make it down south, I will come to you.
Oh, you don't want to do a California tour again and be the Aussie? And you did that once upon a time.
Be a good reason to go back to California. That's true. I would consider that as well. But yeah, I would definitely, I'm really interested and excited to see what you continue to do as you build on what you've already achieved with teaching this and with bringing this to people. So it's an exciting time for you. And as I said before, I'm really proud of what you've been able to do and excited for you in terms of what you've been able to do.
Thank you. And thanks for coming like on the podcast, sharing all of your knowledge and expertise. I've always enjoyed learning from you, and I respect you so much as a yoga teacher and as a human, and now also as a physical therapist and a, you know, purveyor of somatic education. And we'll definitely be in touch. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, if they have any questions or, you know, want to learn more about what you do, how could they reach you?
Probably the best thing to do is through my email address. I'm just trying to think about what's the best way for people to get in touch with me. Which I guess we can put in the show notes. If you want to get in touch. Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much again. And see you soon.
Thanks, Amy.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Free Your Soma podcast. If you enjoyed this interview with Amanda and feel inspired to learn more about the Radiance program, please go to www.freeyoursoma.com. The next round starts November 4th. Podcast listeners will receive $500 off of the 6-month program. I'm so excited to see you blossom and shine as the Soma, the being that you truly are. So much love to you.